Did Germany attack Britain? Is that how you got into a war with Germany?
Germany attacked Poland.
Oh, but not the UK.
No.
This is just so easy to flip if you want to do this. Did Ukraine attack Russia? Tucker, did Ukraine attack Russia? Oh, they were threatened by NATO. Did NATO attack Russia? What's the excuse for Russia invading Ukraine then?
Did Germany attack Britain? Is that how you got into a war with Germany?
Germany attacked Poland.
Oh, but not the UK.
No.
Oh, okay. Because that detail does get lost.
They wanted
to. So you voluntarily joined the war?
Yes.
Okay, right. I'm not defending Hitler, of course.
Oh, thanks. Because it definitely didn't feel that way.
But it's just a fact that you weren't attacked. So when you say that Churchill saved Britain, well, Britain got into the war voluntarily.
Well, not voluntarily. One of our neighboring European countries was attacked, and it was quite clear that Adolf Hitler and the Nazis wanted to take over Europe. This was an existential threat to Europe and therefore to the UK. So you're arguing
that he would have come for the UK?
100%. I think it's very naive to
your politicians and he, and there's like not one person who was saying that in 1939-40.
Well, no, Neville Chamberlain wasn't, because he totally misread what was going on. Winston Churchill completely read correctly what was going on and came out of the wilderness to actually come and save us. I think
you signed a treaty with Poland that locked you into a course of action that destroyed your country. I'm just saying.
You don't honestly...
Destroyed your country? Does he think that them winning World War II is what led to multiculturalism or something? Or
do you think the Nazis would have stopped at Poland?
Look, I'm just going...
Pussy won't answer the question because he's a fucking pussy-ass bitch motherfucker. God, these guys are all fucking losers. It's so boring. I wish I would have got involved in politics earlier. 20 years ago? There's no way that it was this bad, right? These are adult men who are supposedly spending their whole lives doing politics and studying shit. And, like, this is the level of argumentation? Like, this wouldn't pass for high school debate.
Stopped at Poland.
Look, I'm just going by what contemporaneous sources said. Mm. I have no idea. Hitler invaded Russia, so obviously that's deranged and incredibly destructive. So I don't know is the truth. He was focused on communism. No one doubts that. This was not a communist country. But I'm just saying Britain voluntarily joined the war.
Like, this is just such a stupid word game. Like, to use the word voluntary here is just so fucking retarded. Like, if I aim a gun at you and I tell you to, like, get on your knees and suck my dick, it's like, okay, so you did. He didn't actually, like, physically force you, right? You did get on your knees. You voluntarily did that. You didn't have to. 100%, right? You didn't have to. It's just, like, such a retarded use. It's such a... Like to abuse the word voluntary here, like miss it. It's like this is like a retard's approach to it. It's not, no, hold on. It's not, because retarded people would be more smart than this. This is just a bad faith approach where you're trying to hyper constrain the use of a word so narrowly to win whatever Hitler dick suck argument. It's not even a Hitler dick suck argument. It's just an anti-Western argument.
This was not a communist country, but I'm just saying Britain voluntarily joined the war. It was a war that you were not involved in and you got in. But my question is, why did it destroy Britain? I don't understand. As the victor nation,
it didn't destroy Britain.
Also, this was just fucking wild. I don't know, bro. That one guy who was like, if you just look at politics in America today and pretend that like everybody's acting like they're 12 years old, it explains everything. I feel like so much of that is.
You say the word faggot on camera?
No.
Why? Because you don't want to get arrested, do you?
No, I don't want to be arrested.
Because it's so harmful to people.
No.
Is it like gay bashing? What's wrong with that?
No, would you use that word?
Faggot.
Yeah.
I just did.
Yeah, but would you? Okay, but why?
And I'm using it because you're not allowed to, because you're...
I'm allowed to.
Go ahead.
I don't want to.
Say, I love gay people.
I'm allowed to. I just choose not.
If Piers was the true Giga Chad, he would have said the N-word and asked Tucker Carlson to do that. That would have been... No, I'm just kidding. Don't do that. I didn't really go over that much this thing on stream, but there's like really weird shit. Somebody... I retweeted this guy, I think. Hold on. So this has to do with the leaks coming out. This guy tweeted out some shit. That was an interesting analysis of this, but we'll read a little bit more of this. Chaos. Two rival factions, one tied to the president and the other to the VP, are trying to set U.S. policy on Ukraine, cutting out the State Department. It also explains how we got the leaked call, which is crazy in my opinion. I don't know if that just seems wild to me, but... Each one pushes Ukraine to surrender, then leaks to the press to claim that they are official. FT, Financial Times, now reports that Vance's faction is holding its own talks. So this is quoted from the article. The U.S. official added that Secretary of State Marco Rubio and Steve Witkoff, President Donald Trump's special envoy went their separate ways to continue those pieces on their end. The nice thing about adding Dan Driscoll to this process is you're adding to, not taking away, so he's able to continue conversations and things like that. And then this guy's trying to point out that these are three rival factions in the U.S. government, basically, that are conducting U.S. foreign policy. Also, I don't know if this applies to every sector of history. Maybe it's different in some places. Maybe this is good. But for Israel-Palestine, the history, anytime you're having talks with like different factions that are supposedly representing the same people, that's always a disaster. It always means some fuck shit is happening or just stuff is not okay. I think it was at the Madrid Peace Conference in 94, or did those talks start in 91? I think it was 94 is when Israel got to peace with Jordan, but they were also trying to engage a Palestinian delegation in peace talks as well. But eventually, I think the U.S. State Department I think it was the Israeli leadership just started eventually engaging Arafat directly in peace talks because they couldn't get far enough with the other people. Like anytime you got like multiple talks going on, you're just trying to cut somebody out, basically, is how it kind of works, I think. From the Israeli-Palestinian perspective, maybe that's not true all the time in history. Maybe there are times when you're engaging multiple parts of a government's apparatus in peace talks separately. That seems mindfucky to me, but I don't know. But anyway, Twitter guy here, Capital Hunters, is pointing out three different factions in the White House. You've got the Kushner-Trump faction, which is currently represented by Steve Witkoff. You've got the State Department that's ran by Marco Rubio, which in my mind, I don't know if – I feel like the U.S. State Department is probably the one that should be doing these talks. Like our Department of State is supposed to be the representation of America to the rest of the world and conduct like foreign affairs. It's kind of weird that special envoys in the White House are doing all of this with no collaboration with our Department of State. That seems kind of fucking not right, but okay. And then you've got this Dan Driscoll guy who I guess is part of the J.D. Vance, Peter Thiel faction. I don't even know who. I feel like I've heard this name a lot and I know I've seen this guy. Is he just, he's currently the Secretary of the Army. Is that right now? I have to look at that chart again to see where this guy even fits in on everything. This is a civilian. Okay. Is Secretary of the Army, is this subdivision of the DOD? It's a senior civilian officer within the U.S. Department of Defense with statutory responsibility. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Oh, sorry. Department of War. My bad. Jesus, my bad. Just like Secretary Rubio said yesterday, we're going to continue this 24/7. All effort. We're trying to move as fast and aggressively as possible. In October, the Trump faction, son-in-law Jared Kushner, and business pal Steve Witkoff met secretly with a Russian representative in Miami. Now, the Vance faction, his Yale friend Dan Driscoll, is meeting in Abu Dhabi with Russians and a Ukrainian. I guess there's a story about that meeting. Rival efforts. Okay, so a different branch of talks. Financial Times source is clearly part of the Vance camp, and tries to portray the Secretary of the Army, Dan Driscoll, a 39-year-old former first lieutenant whose only qualification, his friendship with Vance, as a new important conduit to Russia. FT had to ask if Ukrainians were involved at all. The meeting in Abu Dhabi comes after progress over the weekend in talks between Ukrainian and U.S. delegations in Geneva. The U.S. Army Secretary was also involved in negotiations in the Swiss city. Driscoll has been involved with this peace process pretty hot and heavy in the past few days, said the U.S. official, referring to the talks with Ukrainian officials in recent days. He's been obviously very involved, so he's able to kind of communicate that peace to Russia. Obviously, Ukraine knows what's going on, and they knew where he was coming after Geneva, the U.S. official said. So this is showing, I guess, that Driscoll is pushing a separate effort from Witkoff, and then Driscoll is acting as a conduit to Russia because he can communicate to Russia, and then Driscoll's effort is mostly about Russia. FT had to ask if Ukraine was informed. The guy, the tweeter here is inferring that based on the response, that this would have been a response to that question. Is Ukraine involved or whatever, right? Unlike the early Axios reporting on Kushner/Witkoff, FT uses direct quotes that show how irregular this is. Driscoll's outreach is new, separate, and aggressive. The takeaway, Putin, out of cash to pay his soldiers, is desperate for a ceasefire and calling all of his helpers. The U.S. official added the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, and Steve Witkoff, President Donald Trump's special envoy, went their separate ways to continue those pieces on their end. And this is just a restatement of before. Okay. It was unclear whether the three sides in Abu Dhabi were meeting together or talking separately. Putin's economy is crashing and he's out of money. All this chaos in U.S. foreign policy began the week that Russia began selling off its gold reserves. What we're seeing is weakness. Putin is calling out all his U.S. assets to stave off catastrophe. The leaks are the story. Someone, the State Department, is now pushing back against the freelancing by leaking a full recording of Witkoff's October phone call with a Russian official. Witkoff is dimmer than had been reported and clearly on Russia's side. The fact that we had that phone call is kind of crazy, I think. I don't know if that's ever, if we've gotten a leak like that before. I saw a reporting that a European intel agency leaked it. How? How would they even have access to that? Explain the phone call. I think there was one or two phone calls that were leaked, but it basically shows that like Russia is drafting stuff and then handing it off to Witkoff to kind of present as his own work, basically. Let's listen to it. Is there a recording of it or just the transcript of the recording of it? I don't think we've heard the actual phone call. I think it's just a transcript of the recording. Pay attention to the dates because the timing matters. Steve Witkoff, this article was yesterday, spoke with Yuri Yushikov, a Russian official, on October 14th. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky held a meeting with President Donald Trump in Washington, D.C. on October 17th. Trump has been hinting that he would offer to sell Tomahawks long-range cruise missiles to the Ukrainian army, but he did not. Why not? Perhaps Yushikov listened to Witkoff's advice and persuaded Russian President Vladimir Putin to call Trump on October 16th. Witkoff, in other words, may have helped block that sale, and that would make Witkoff responsible for prolonging the war. Let me back up and explain. Witkoff, a former real estate deal, wait, hold on, a former real estate developer, is supposed to be negotiating a peace settlement between Russia and Ukraine. He is in theory acting on behalf of the United States, but also on behalf of millions of people who want peace in Ukraine and security in Europe. Yushikov, a former Russian ambassador to the United States, has different interests. Like his boss, he wants Russia to win the war. A tape of the October 14th conversation has been leaked to Bloomberg. That's how we know that Witkoff suggested to Yushikov that Putin call Trump. He also offered advice about what Putin should say. The Russian leader should flatter Trump, of course, which is standard advice for speaking to the American president, compliment him on his great success in Gaza, congratulate the president on this achievement. After that, Witkoff said, it's going to be a really good call. Then, Witkoff advised, Putin should impress upon Trump this idea. The Russian Federation has always wanted a peace deal. That's my belief. I told the president I believe that. Together, the two of them would cook up a peace plan, just like Trump's recent Gaza peace plan. Yushikov gave Putin this advice. Putin followed it. How do we know? Because Putin did, in fact, call Trump on October 16th. The call lasted for more than 2 hours. Trump said the call was productive and that the two leaders would soon meet, potentially in Budapest, which never happened. During his meeting with Zelensky on the following day, he did not offer Tomahawk missiles to Ukraine. Instead, he became emotional and angry. In keeping with a long-standing Russian demand, Trump tried to persuade the Ukrainians to give up Ukrainian land in Donetsk province that they currently control, land that the Russians have not been able to conquer after more than a decade of fighting. This is what Putin wants, to obtain Ukrainian territory without fighting for it, to weaken Ukraine, and to use any temporary ceasefire as an opportunity to plan the next invasion. With a single phone call, one insider told Politico last month, Putin appears to have changed President Trump's mind on Ukraine once again. This was Witkoff's achievement. Working with another Kremlin insider, Kirill Dmitriev, he went on last week to propose the 28-point peace plan that could, if carried out, temporarily stop the fighting, but position Russia to invade a weakened Ukraine at a later date. I've written this before, but it cannot be repeated often enough. This war will end only when Russia stops fighting. The Russians need to halt the invasion, recognize the sovereignty of Ukraine, and drop their imperial ambitions. Then, Ukraine can discuss borders, prisoners, and the fate of thousands of kidnapped Ukrainian children. But the only way to persuade Russia to stop fighting is to put pressure on Russia, not Ukraine, Russia. Wait, what if we sanction India more, though? Or what if we sanction, The Ukrainians have already said they will stop fighting and agree to a ceasefire right now on the current lines of conflict. Yet, Witkoff is seeking to persuade Trump not to put pressure on Russia. We don't really know why. I saw somebody in chat earlier ask, like, is Russia actually doing bad? Because we keep hearing this all the time. My understanding is they've been doing pretty bad for quite a while. The only thing that's kind of like keeping them afloat right now is basically like the wartime economy, that they can kind of productively employ a bunch of their citizenry doing war-related stuff and can kind of pump a bunch of fake money into the economy doing that. However, I think they have frozen for a long time the ability to do currency conversions in Russia. And I think now they've had to like start selling off their gold reserves. So as soon as they transition out of any kind of wartime economy, I think it's, my understanding is it's going to be very, very, very rough for Russia, that is going to be a rough pathway forward. Witkoff has no previous diplomatic experience, so perhaps he's naive. He spent many years in New York real estate at a time when Russians were spending fortunes on property, so perhaps he feels gratitude. Maybe he's helping Russia win because he has the deepest respect for President Putin, as he told Yushchikov, and admires his brutality. Maybe he or others in the White House entourage have business interests tied to Russia, or hope to. In addition to discussing peace, Witkoff has also been, according to the document made public last week, talking with the Russians about American investments in the areas of energy, natural resources, infrastructure, artificial intelligence, data centers, rare earth metal extraction projects, and the Arctic. Whatever the reason, Witkoff is prolonging the conflict. He is not promoting peace. His call to Yushchikov was not, as Trump said last night, a normal negotiating tactic. Every time he intervenes, advocating for Putin's positions, he encourages the Russians to think that they can get Trump on their side, pull America away from Europe, break up NATO, and win the war. In other words, every time he intervenes on behalf of the Russians, he contributes to the deaths of Ukrainians, the attacks on infrastructure, the ongoing tragedy that affects millions of people. If this were a normal American administration, he would be fired immediately, but nothing is normal. But nothing about this negotiation or this administration is normal at all. Why do we know Anne Applebaum? She did other large articles that we've read before, right? What am I thinking of? She was at that one event, no? I feel like there's a huge article or something. Wait, is this The Atlantic? Is she the one who wrote the article about the signal leaks with Jeffrey Goldberg? Anne Applebaum is the one who writes exclusively about democratic backslide and populism. She frequently writes about Orban as well as Ukraine. Huh. Probably watched interviews. Oh, maybe actually. Maybe we watched a video of her or something. Jeff Goldblum. Maybe that was the guy's name.
Is it really a diplomatic offensive if there is no salacious leak that comes with it? Well, if so, then good news. We now have a salacious leak. Yes, Bloomberg has gotten a hold of an alleged phone call between a U.S. envoy and a Russian advisor. And the information revealed in it shows just how broken the mindset inside of the White House is. So, on the agenda for today are 3 points. First, I want to go over just the facts of the Witkoff phone call. Then we will try to understand what Witkoff's mindset is here, which is perhaps more mundane than the current narrative suggests. Afterward, I will switch things up and point out that the leak itself is the bigger story. You see, someone else has interjected themselves into the situation, and we need to understand why. That is where the real intrigue is.
Like, I just... Sorry, this is frustrating. You have a federal government, okay? You have this little office here called the White House office, okay, which is the office of the presidency. So this is like his chief of staff, maybe helps him communicate with other departments, schedules meetings, whatever else. And then you have these other huge offices that do like really big, important things. You've got your Department of Justice. You've got your Department of State. We call it the State Department. You've got your Department of Defense. You get these huge departments that do things. You have this whole department here. I'm pretty sure, somebody could correct me if I'm wrong, but when you hear like a U.S. ambassador or like all of our foreign diplomatic communicators are all part of the State Department, the Department of State. This is your big boy. What is the Wikipedia? U.S. State Department is an executive department of the U.S. federal government responsible for the country's foreign policy and relations. Equivalent to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of other countries, its primary duties are advising the U.S. President on international relations, administering diplomatic missions, negotiating international treaties and agreements, protecting citizens abroad, and representing the U.S. at the United Nations. When you have this whole-ass department to do this, why are you hiring fucking no-name loser, like, retarded fucks like Witkoff? Anytime you see, like, special envoy, why? Why are we using the reason why is because Trump is a corrupt fucking loser who's just trying to enrich himself personally, and he just trusts his personal gangster fucking friends to go out and do shit because Witkoff has huge mutual financial interests with Trump and his family. But like that should just it should immediately come off as like, wait, what? Why are you sending why do you have like a friend from the White House? Because the special envoy means that like it's just a person that Trump appointed. Like it's not like an official person who necessarily has any qualifications or any training or whatever. It's just a guy Trump said, hey, I trust this dude. He's going to be my special envoy from the White House. Why not use your fucking State Department? Hello? You have a whole ass department here dedicated with collectively millions of years of experience in these types of foreign affairs. Why are you sending these fucking losers from the White House to do these negotiations? Just cringe.
But let's begin with the U.S.-Russian phone call. On the U.S. side, the main figure is Steve Witkoff. You will remember him as the special envoy who is currently negotiating a ceasefire between Ukraine and Russia. You may especially remember him from earlier this week as the main U.S. entity behind that 28-point non-starter of a peace plan. On the Russian side, the main figure is Yuri Ushakov. Ushakov is the former Russian ambassador to the United States, and is currently one of Putin's top foreign policy advisors. I might also describe him as the Russian Forrest Gump. He is in a ton of stock images that I have used over the years, even if he has avoided being a part of the story until now. Anyway, the date was October 14th. Witkoff was shifting away from Gaza war diplomacy to Russia-Ukraine. The two had a roughly 5-minute phone call where, unprompted, Witkoff offered Ushakov some advice on how Putin should approach the situation with Trump. Here is the key part of the transcript. I would have Putin make the call to Trump and just reiterate that you congratulate the president on this achievement, that you supported it, that you respect that he is a man of peace, and you're really glad to have seen it happen. So I would say that. I think from that, it's going to be a really good call. Because let me tell you what I told the president. I told the president that you, the Russian Federation, has always wanted a peace deal. That's my belief. I told the president I believe that. And I believe the question is, the issue is that we have two nations that are having a hard time coming to a compromise. And when we do, we're going to have a peace deal. I'm even thinking that maybe we set out like a 20-point peace proposal, just like we did in Gaza. We put a 20-point Trump plan together that was 20 points for peace. And I'm thinking maybe we do the same thing with you. Maybe Putin says to President Trump, you know, Steve and Yuri discussed a very similar 20-point plan to peace, and that could be something that we think might move the needle a little bit. We're open to those sorts of things, to explore what it's going to take to get a peace deal done. Now, me to you.
Wow, this is like some Game of Thrones tier shit. Like, unironically, actually, it kind of is Game of Thrones tier, because, like, Robert Baratheon was too retarded for politics, and so there's a whole bunch of little schemers around him that are trying to advance or further their own interests. Like, unironically, like, it's just so crazy to me.
I know what it's going to take to get a peace deal done. Donetsk and maybe a land swap somewhere. But I'm saying, instead of talking like that, let's talk more hopefully, because I think we're going to get a deal here. And I think, Yuri, the president will give me a lot of space and discretion to get to the deal. And with that, let's switch to understanding what Witkoff's mindset is here. We need to do this because, substantively speaking, it is hard to say whether his advice to Ushakov directly altered the fate of the world in a significant way. But it does speak to a certain naivete in these negotiations, which you can see directly in the discussion, and which certainly is playing a major role in shaping the substantive outcome of a potential deal. You will recall that Witkoff had a successful career in real estate before taking positions in Trump's administrations. Now, it is not uncommon for individuals like that state before taking positions in Trump's administrations. Now, it is not uncommon for individuals like that to want to move to government positions so they can leave a lasting and positive mark on the world. Spend enough time in Washington, and you will start to see them everywhere. The problem is that all of their experience is in business. They do not have experience on the government side of things, and those worlds operate in completely separate manners. For the current situation, I am sure that Witkoff has a basic understanding of what is happening. There is a war in Ukraine. War is bad. People die. Economies plunge into dark depths. The rest of the world suffers negative externalities. And thus, a noble goal is to end the war. Witkoff is happy to parachute in, because he thinks that he can contribute. He is an expert negotiator, after all. Why not just apply his expertise to this new domain? The problem is that he does not understand the substantive problems in the region.
I just need that one thing on repeat. Somebody linked me I think I might have tweeted it out a long time ago, that clip of Witkoff talking to Tucker Carlson, where he didn't even know the names of even like Donetsk and Luhansk or whatever. He had no clue. And this was the guy that was going to become our lead negotiator to take point on these issues. Oh my God.
And I am not saying this like everyone working in diplomacy needs to have written a dissertation on the subject to be helpful. Someone like Marco Rubio, for example, has done nothing of the sort. But Rubio has someone at the State Department desk on Russia. I am not saying this like everyone working in diplomacy needs to have written a dissertation on the subject to be helpful. Someone like Marco Rubio, for example, has done nothing of the sort. But Rubio has someone at the State Department desk on Russia and Ukraine who can help him. Moreover, Rubio has been around long enough to understand that he needs that help, so he is not working on an island. The other half of the problem is that Witkoff has spent his entire life operating in a world where externally enforced contracts govern business behavior. And therein lies a problem. You see, the bulk of business contracts are about negotiating services for payments. In contrast, international relations is completely different. You rarely are exchanging money for goods or labor. Rather, both parties are competing for the same good. Failure to reach terms leads to bloody battles, and none of it is externally enforced. In other words, you want someone negotiating who understands less about business and more about the mafia. Don't give me Steve Witkoff. Give me...
Was it this?
Well, first of all, I think the largest issue in that conflict are these so-called four regions, Donbass, yes. Crimea, the name
Lugansk, yeah.
Lugansk, and there's two others. They're Russian-speaking.
Yep.
There have been referendums where...
Like, what? This is the guy. This is Witkoff. This is Witkoff. Okay? March 21st. This year, This is our special envoy that is negotiating the Ukraine, Russia. Like, this is him. It's just, like, unbelievable to me.
Michael Corleone or Stringer Bell. And while I am sure that someone has sat down with Wyckoff to explain the need to write...
He doesn't know that. It's not even so much that he doesn't know the names of the regions, which is whatever, but he's, like, literally mixing... It's like saying, like, oh, like, the most important states? Well, you have Texas, the United States of America, and California. It's like, what? What the fuck are you talking about? Because Donbass is a larger region, right, in which it encompasses Luhansk and Donetsk. It's just like, what do you...
Tony or Stringer Bell. And while I am sure that someone has sat down with Wyckoff to explain the need to write self-enforcing contracts in international relations, that is an entirely separate skill set from what he has done his entire life. His apparent expertise does not apply, unlike, say, someone with Rubio's background. But now Wyckoff has a high-ranking member of the Russian government saying nice things about how the war is bad, and that the killing needs to stop. He is even hearing about how Russia is willing to offer concessions and build guarantees into the deal. Maybe someone in the Kremlin even gave Wyckoff their word, and Wyckoff has seen movies where that sort of thing matters. What Wyckoff does not understand is that those concessions are meaningless to someone.
In terms of Luhansk, is the Ukrainian name of Lugansk is the Russian name. He uses the latter. Sure, because Tucker suggested it, but he's just retarded.
One with substantive knowledge of the situation. And those guarantees are easily broken in a world without external enforcement. But the point is that Wyckoff genuinely thinks that he is on the verge of a breakthrough. He thinks that he is the good guy here, and the deal will be good for the United States, Ukraine, the suffering Russian people, the rest of the world.
Wait, why are we assuming that? Did I miss that explanation? Why would we assume that Wyckoff is doing that? He's not just a self-interested, greedy fuck who's enriching himself and his family and Trump's family with other little foreign financial adventures.
And, incidentally, Wyckoff's historical legacy. Ah, but there is just one problem. Donald Trump. Wyckoff knows how capricious the president can be, so he begins to offer advice to his Russian counterpart on how to personally handle the man. There is nothing wrong here from his perspective, because, remember, Wyckoff thinks that this breakthrough is a good deal for everyone. The last thing that he wants to see is Russia fumble the ball right at the one-yard line. My apologies to international viewers for that analogy. So Putin needs to know the best way of extending the offer to Trump, so that Trump will accept this path forward. What Wyckoff...
He said that Wyckoff thinks he's a good guy, not that Wyckoff is a good guy. No, but I'm saying, does Wyckoff even think he's a good guy? I don't know.
...does not understand, of course, is that Russia is playing him. Yushchikov and anyone else who meets him in Moscow is not his friend. And now he has divulged information that will allow Russia to continue playing the United States government at the highest level. Now, I said earlier that I am doubtful that this had a meaningful effect on what has happened over the last month. Wyckoff's advice on how to deal with Trump is the same information that everyone has been saying about Trump for the last 9 years. But it is still not something that Wyckoff should be doing.
Yeah, why is the special envoy giving advice to foreign leadership on how to handle the president? I mean, handle him. Not like have a productive conversation, but like manipulate him.
He definitely should not be structuring the negotiations in the manner that he has, and that this alleged phone call confirms. Overall, the affair immediately demonstrates two things about the Trump administration. One, it is not a good look when the determinant of a foreign policy is how that policy is getting pitched to the president. What should matter is whether the policy itself is good or not. Two, Wyckoff's coaching runs contrary to the conspiracy theory that Trump actively wants Russia to win the war, due to compromise or otherwise. At least from Wyckoff's perspective, Trump needs some massaging to follow the Kremlin's recommendation. I guess for some, this will be a perverse silver lining. Bloomberg released the transcript of a second phone call, which has not received nearly as much attention as the first. And this one is different. It is between Yushchikov and Kirill Dmitriev, the central figure behind the aforementioned 28-point plan. And, side note, I actually think that this is the more interesting of the two transcripts. It is just that everyone is focused on Wyckoff and the domestic politics in the United States at the moment. So, fair enough, I am focusing on just that part for today.
Yeah, this one is really weird, too. I think I read this off stream, though. I'm gonna use restroom real quick. Hold on.
This is the best, you know, show Putin can hope for. Mm. Not a single straight answer. It's not about how many weapons you have, ammunition. It's, are you willing to fight and die? Oh, it's nice. You have a Canadian-led brigade in Latvia. What's the order for this brigade? Will they shoot if Russians cross the border? We know the answer. It will take ages to negotiate. I still didn't hear a clear response to, it's not, you know, I can't even imagine this. How can we discuss seriously the deal made by Trump's business partner? You know, it's a real estate deal to enrich Trump's family and sell Ukraine. And it's, yeah, how can we seriously discuss that Ukraine will have to give up fortifications that are saving Europe? Ah, we're celebrating NATO's. NATO is not strong. NATO doesn't exist. It's a fake. It's NATO, four letters. The reason you are still sitting here and celebrating it, Ukraine is dying every minute. It's a massive sacrifice. If not for Ukraine standing in front of Russia, Russian tanks would be already in Poland. You all suggested that Ukraine would give up. You offered Zelensky a ride, and he said, I don't need ride and ammunition. 4 years, Ukraine is fighting for the whole Europe. NATO was built to fight only one war, not to go to Afghanistan, not to go to Syria, one war to save free Europe from Russian aggression. Ukraine is the only country that is fighting this war, and we're still discussing, should we include them or not? Ukraine is the only country that is fulfilling NATO's destiny. And we all...
Oof. That is kind of historically ass-pained that, like, NATO was formed as a response to Soviet expansionism and to protect other nations from falling under, like, the Soviet umbrella, but all the NATO missions have been aggressively basically bombing things in the Middle East, I guess.
Oh, they're everything. Oh, let's...
Or wait, the... was the Kosovo stuff, was this, a UN thing, or was that a NATO thing? The Balkans was... Serbia, not NATO. Was Serbia? I don't remember. That might have been... Okay, that might have been a NATO thing, at least. But even that wasn't against, like, the Soviet Union, right? Or Russia, whatever.
Yeah, let's sacrifice them. But Zelensky is making... I don't know how to explain this choice. As a Russian, I also feel guilty. That's why I cannot tell him... show Trump middle finger. But again, we have how many senators we have here? Are you going to tell Donald Trump that he cannot do that? You have 85 is more than two seats, yes, if I'm out of 100.
Senators?
So, yes, how come that, this bill is still sitting somewhere on the floor of the Senate? And
how do countries not lose faith in NATO and withdraw after all this fuck shit? In my opinion, and I still feel this way for all of the European Union as well, I still think the whole world is waiting for the United States to wake up. That right now everybody's kind of going through a bad dream, and we're talking about preparing for the future and what European leadership and security is going to look like and the new trade deals. But I think everybody's still, like, in the back of their mind, like, praying that the U.S. is going to come to its senses and wake up, and we can kind of go back to how things were before. But
it's not still being done. Putin, Xi Jinping, all others, they are celebrating it. And by the way, Russia has North Korean, they have Cubans, they have Africans, volunteers. So, and we're still talking about escalation. We have everything, military, political, economic powers on our side, and we're still losing the war. It's thanks to Ukraine, Russia is not fulfilling Putin's dream of restoring a Russian empire. But if, God forbid, Ukraine is forced to make this deal, then very clear, Putin will realize his dream. And then, guys, you're next.
Who is eavesdropping on Steve Witkoff's calls with Russian officials to end the war in Ukraine, then leaking them to Bloomberg? It's the same thing the NSA did to Michael Flynn when he was negotiating with Russian officials. It's the most serious leaking crime in the U.S. code. Oh, so whistleblowers are bad? We don't like whistleblowers now? Or why does Glenn care so much that Russian communications were leaked, never shown? I was going to bring up this Victoria Nuland call that we obsessively talk about that was a huge nothing burger that people use as proof that the United States staged Euromaidan in 2014. That Victoria Nuland call, they obsess over every single pro-Russian cocksucker. All of them obsess over that fucking phone call. But nobody gives a fuck about this one, or they complain that there are leaks, and it's like, okay, it's so transparently fucking stupid. Never shown any deference towards Victoria Nuland's leaked phone call. Going from the Snowden leak to this today is quite the transformation. Social media is pretty fucking stupid, Destiny. It's not social media, it's media.